Jim Lovell, our audience has heard of you before from that fantastic and long Gemini 7 flight. How do you feel about going into space again?
Well, I'm looking forward to it. I think that the flight of Apollo 8 will be quite interesting. It will certainly be different than either Gemini 7 or Gemini 12. So I'm looking forward to it quite a bit.
You're going to increase your record as the man with the longest hours in space, too, aren't you?
I guess that's a natural ending to this flight. Yes, I will be.
That means you're going to top your partner Frank Borman, too, doesn't it?
Well, of course, I went on Gemini 12, the last part, and which was an entirely different flight from 7, and and this flight is sort of a compromise between the two, so I've seen quite a bit of variety in spaceflight.
Mm-hmm. Jim Lovell, let's tell our audience just a bit about your background and your family. Where are you from originally in the United States?
Well, I've lived sort of a nomad type of life. I was born in Ohio, but spent most of my life in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, where I claim home.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, after I went to the Naval Academy, I moved around quite a bit, went through flight training, then to the space program after a tour, several tours in naval aviation. And now my wife and four children and I live in Seabrook, Texas.
How long have you been here in the Houston area?
We've been here just about 6 years now.
Mm-hmm. This is really home now, then, isn't it?
That's right. Seabrook is home.
Well, you and Bill Anders were both Naval Academy men, right?
Yes, and I guess it'll be kind of hard to keep Frank in line again.
The old Air Force
man.
Yeah.
Okay. Old West Pointer.
But he's the command pilot, so maybe the two of you can keep him in line.
That's right.
How do you feel about this third space flight for you?
Well, I feel that, of course, I'm quite enthused about it. I think that the challenge is there. I think the mission is quite challenging. You know, I mean, there's a lot to do. It's certainly interesting. It's different. And I'm looking forward to it.
It's never old hat, though, is it?
No, it's never old hat. There's an awful lot of work before the flight, and it gets to be, you know, tedious and long. But I think the flight itself is the reward.
Good luck throughout the mission, Jim.
Thank you.
Jim, during the Earth coast or the Earth parking orbit period there, before you decide whether you're going to be able to fire onto the moon or not, what's the major activity in the spacecraft?
Well, the major activity, of course, is getting prepared for the translunar injection burn. And this, of course, is the first milestone in our Apollo 8 flight. This determines whether we're going to make a lunar flight or just an Earth orbital flight. I'll be in the center seat. Some of the items that we'll be doing is to check the optical system to make sure that we have a navigation system after we commit ourselves to a lunar voyage. We'll be getting out various equipments, like for instance, camera. We'll be setting up the various systems under Bill Anders' request. He'll be going through the systems. Of course, our first injection opportunity is over the Pacific, and we'll make an orbit around the Earth and come around and burn. And this will be quite exciting to stand by for the countdown and then actually have that engine lit up for the second time. I'll be helping Frank to monitor the burn parameters, for instance, the buildup in velocity and the attitude excursions of the vehicle as the engine starts burning again.
While Bill is over there checking out all of the onboard systems, you and Frank will be preparing for the translunar burn?
That's right. We'll be setting up such criteria as putting tape up with the burn times, how long the burn will last, the limits to the attitude excursion that we can expect, preparing ourselves for an abort maneuver in case the burn stops early or the attitude deviates off from its limit, something like that.
Are the two of you doing most of the communication with the ground during that time?
No, the communication usually varies between all three of us. It depends on who happens to have his hand on the switch at the time. And, of course, it also depends on what the problem is. If it's a systems problem, Bill will be talking with the ground. If it's a go-no-go status, I suspect Frank will do most of the talking.
Mm-hmm. And now, leading into that burn and throughout it, what will you be doing?
We'll be strictly monitoring the burn parameters. In other words, it's a long burn, and we'll be watching the delta V count up, you know, the increase in velocity. We'll be looking at the time. I'll be looking at the number two ball, which has a different reference system than the number one ball. And we'll be seeing that the attitude excursions are just correct. And it'll be one where we'll be all holding our breath, hoping that the S4B burns it in the proper trajectory with the proper amount of velocity.
Describe the ball.
Well, it's a regular 5-inch attitude indicator that we'll have on at certain angles that we'll be watching. And as the engine burns, the vehicle will start deviating back and forth, of course, in the initial transients. And we hope that it steadies out in a nice, smooth burn as the velocity builds up.
That's your that thing called the 8-ball, or the ball.
Yeah.
That's your major instrument at that point, isn't it?
That's right. That and, of course, the velocity indicator. In other words, we have to attain a velocity of over 35,000 feet per second to make the lunar voyage. Anything less than that, we will be ending up in various other type of orbits, maybe a high apogee orbit. Or if it quits right away, we'll just be at a low Earth orbit.
That is going to be an exciting time there, watching that burn build up. That's the difference on whether you're going to the moon or not.
That's right. The S4B stage has to burn a second time, and it's a long burn. And it's the burn that gives you that velocity, which is just a little bit under escape velocity from the Earth, to get you all the way to the moon.
You get a good burn, you look at all of the instruments, all the parameters, and everything looks go. Now what?
Well, the next thing we do, of course, is get prepared to separate from the booster. The booster has control, by the way, during Earth parking orbit. It controls the attitude, and it will control its change in attitude after the burn to get in a good position so that we can separate and turn around and see it. Now, in an actual lunar mission, of course, we will turn around and go down and get the LEM, which is attached to the booster. In this particular case, we're going to turn around and go back to the booster and photograph it for just a little bit, and then we'll separate from it.
Good luck.
Thank you.
And put you on a lunar trajectory. Then you will know whether you're on a path to the moon and back safely or whether you need corrections. That's when your biggest job as the space navigator begins too, isn't it?
Yes. The S4B, or the third stage, will put us on a trajectory which we would normally call a free return trajectory. If it burned perfectly, it would send the spacecraft to the moon. The lunar gravity would affect it such that it would turn the spacecraft back towards the Earth, and it would come home without any further corrections necessary to the spacecraft. This is practically impossible, though, but it will put us on a course such that our small engines, our reaction control engines, will be sufficient to correct any deviations in the path to make this trip home. And therefore, we are not dependent on our big engine for the return trip.
What will you be doing with the optics there right after that translunar injection?
We'll have, I will have two major concerns, both translunar and trans-Earth. On the translunar flight, I'll be navigating using the horizon and stars of both the moon and the Earth. The purpose of this particular flight now is to check out the navigation system that we have on board Apollo.
This is a brand new system that's really getting its first full exercise, isn't it?
In that respect, yes, because it'll be the first time that we're operating at distances other than just Earth orbit. We'll be going out where, of course, the bodies will be shrinking. Mm-hmm. We do not have on board a accurate means of determining how close we can get to the moon. This is mainly a ground function. But we do have on board the means of computing a safe return back to Earth. And with our navigation and our computer, we would be able to come back to Earth safely if we had lost all communications.
Do you want to describe this reentry corridor for which you're shooting there during the S4B burn and the subsequent mid-course corrections on the way to the moon?
Well, what we're trying to shoot for on the way to the moon is to reach a point around the moon called the Paracynthion of about 60 nautical miles. If we do reach this point, and we will then do what we call a lunar orbit insertion, it's a retro type burn, we will end up in a lunar orbit. This first burn would give us an orbit of between 60 and 170 miles, and then we'll do a second burn to get us into a 60 nautical mile orbit.
Mm-hmm.
That is primarily the navigation going out to the moon, and this is mainly ground control.
When you go behind the moon and perform that lunar orbit insertion burn, you will be the primary navigator. You will have no help from Earth at that point, will you?
Well, no, the Earth will give us the parameters to make the lunar insertion burn. They'll tell us what angle to burn at and how much of the engine we should burn. The primary navigation will be in lunar orbit itself, where we'll do landmark tracking, and also on the way home from the Earth or from the Moon, where we can then navigate, determine our position, and by use of the computer could compute a trajectory to come home safely to hit the entry corridor without any ground communication.
Thanks, Jim Lovell. Now, we're all ready?
Set.
Jim, as the navigator on board during the period that the spacecraft is around the moon, what'll be your function with all of this optical system, with this guidance and navigation instrument?
Well, the main purpose around in lunar orbit is to determine the spacecraft's orbit itself around the moon. In other words, to find out just what the effects of the moon are on the spacecraft and its orbit. Now, we do that two ways. One is by ground tracking, and the second is by using our onboard navigation system. And my job will be to navigate on various landmarks on the lunar surface, and by use of the optic system and the computer system, determine the spacecraft's true orbit. Now, this is very important in future missions, when it might be possible to sight on the LEM that has already landed, and by sighting on that LEM, determine its position and our position for use in their rendezvous at a later time.
The navigation instrument you use is a computerized sextant, highly sophisticated, isn't it?
Yes, it's an optical system that will send its data into a computer for use.
Can you describe it a bit for us?
Well, it actually has a two basic sighting means. It has a scanning telescope, which covers a field of view of about 60 degrees, single power, and then it has a sextant, which is a 28 power, 2-degree field of view instrument. And of course, we acquire by the scanning telescope, and we can track by the sextant.
And you use a star as a known reference point?
For navigation, cislunar, to and from the moon, we use stars and horizon. Now, for orbit determination, either around the Earth or around the Moon, we use landmarks and track on landmarks.
On the surface. This is going to be a very interesting experience. I'm going to be interested in seeing how well you come off with it.
I am, too.
Thanks, Jim Lovell. Jim Lovell, what does the space program mean to you personally?
Well, it means quite a bit to me personally. It's an occupation which I have often thought about, which I am tremendously happy that I'm here, and it's really not a job. It's something which is almost like a hobby to me. I really feel that we have the capability here in our space program to contribute a lot to the world. I think there are a lot of material benefits that could be gathered by our space flights. A lot of peaceful material benefits. But more than that, I think our particular mission at Christmas time has a lot more aspect to it than just going around the moon. I think it's sort of a symbol of the peaceful implications of what we're trying to do here at NASA and in our country. Certainly, we hope that we can, while we're there in the moon's influence, sort of leave a message to the rest of the world and to try to explain to them just how small, and I'm sure I felt this before in Gemini 7, but I think that right now when the Earth shrinks down to 2 degrees, how small the entire Earth is in this vast expanse of a universe. I'm sure we'll finally feel how humble we really are when we see the Earth from the moon.
Man is one thing off there on that little ball, huh?
That's right, and when the Earth disappears behind the moon for the first time, it will be a case where man has divorced himself completely from his habitat. We're no longer in the influence of the Earth. The moon has us. We're looking at the Earth now as an alien body, and I can't help but feel a sense of smallness among this vast universe.
Do something for me. When that happens, will you put your thoughts down and bring them back to us?
I'll be glad to.
Thank you very much, Jim Lovell, and good luck.
Thank you.